This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Eita, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, depending where on the planet you are. Welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrix. Hanging out today with the Black Boer, ex-farce, and you are a farmer, Butsang the Boer.
Hey, more a farce.
Oh, grand.
Grand, bro.
I'm loving the new American refugee look.
Actually, that is the purpose of the look.
Unfortunately, it doesn't come with skin lightener.
So. No. President Trump didn't ask for refugees from South Africa generally. He was specific.
Afrikaners.
The Afrikaners.
Yeah. And because you live in Centurion.
Verwoerdsbeek.
It doesn't make you Afrikaner.
No, but I guess.
Okay, the farm worker lives on the farm. It doesn't make him the Boer.
You know what I said? Yeah. I want to say to President Trump. In Afrikaans, I guess, ook beskikbaar.
Yeah.
I'm also available. I want that refugee status in the USA. I mean, I've got khakis. I qualify.
Yeah, but do you think Trump will also allow you to come with Mavis? Because Mavis is an integral part of your ecosystem. Because without Mavis, who's going to raise your children?
You see...
Pela, we often downplay the role of the domestic help in a lot of households. And you'll find that often... They are the ones that raise the children because you are busy.
They are the mothers. They are the one who cooks for us. They are the one who raise the children.
Mm.
And that's why you find a lot of farm workers for the African community in South Africa.
Yeah.
Their children grow up speaking the so-called black languages,
yes.
Or African
yes.
languages, yes. Because they get it from
auntie. From auntie.
Yeah, and that's the role they are playing. So I don't know this... self-shooting of AfriForum and Donald Trump, how is it gonna work out? Because they can't take our auntie to the USA.
Yeah.
Should they decide to move, and they will actually end up being the aunties and the Mavis and the domestic workers in the USA as refugees. It's not like you're getting a green card.
And you know, the weird thing is our auntie in the US are immigrants themselves. And he wants them out.
He wants them out, yeah.
So who's gonna anteaser in the US?
You know, on a serious note, Tato, I don't think AfriForum, and let's stop with Elon Musk and Trump with their racism and Nazism.
Mm.
AfriForum did not think.
Sure.
When they did these actions, they didn't start now. Recently with the expropriation bill.
Mm. No, there's been a whole roadshow.
It has been a whole roadshow since before the elections and all those things. They did not think, they didn't apply their minds that they were shooting themselves or those that they claim to be representing on the foot.
Mm.
And that's why SA Agri, the South African Agricultural Community Union, came out gun blazing.
Sure.
Because the people who are going to be most affected if Trump or the USA withdraws this AGOA deal.
Mm.
It's the farmers.
The farmers themselves.
Because of their exports.
Absolutely.
To the USA of agricultural products, including mainly wine.
Mm.
The USA is one of the biggest consumers of South African wine.
Sure.
And the wine farms are owned by the so-called Afrikaners. I don't like calling them Afrikaners because it actually means Africans.
Sure.
You know, we are being called blacks and the colonial settlers are called Afrikaners, the Africans. Mm. But the Boers and the African community, and Boers, for those who don't know and who are watching us from all over the world, it actually means the farmers.
Mm.
So these African farmers, that's what Boere and Afrikaners mean. They are the majority, if not, you know, over 90% farmland owners in South Africa, whether it's in the Western Cape Wines or it's in the Free State or anywhere.
And some of the biggest beneficiaries of the very AGOA.
Yes, they are the biggest beneficiary. That's why at some stage when I said to people, I like Donald Trump, what he was doing, people did not understand
yes.
what I meant. I simply like the fact that he is going to press a reset button and unsettle the world.
Mm.
Trump has actually helped us as Africans to unsettle the settlers in South Africa. He has actually started a process of making them uncomfortable in our land. They've become uncomfortable with the expropriation bill. We are not yet, even as a nation, on a land expropriation bill. that is envisaged by, you know, the nationalists and the Pan-Africanists. Mm. We're not yet even there. They're already uncomfortable and rattled.
And those that actually bother to read would know that even within the Constitution as it stands, there's a provision for expropriation.
Yes.
There's a provision for expropriation. So the fact that now there's all this saber rattling, fear mongering, swat gevaar that is clearly coming back, it's actually unfortunate. And clearly, the issue here, I don't even think is the Afrikaner.
You know,
I don't think Trump gives a damn about anybody but Trump.
Yes, yes. And his supporters and funders like Elon Musk.
Do you think it's a coincidence, Botsang, that the day after he met with Israel, this button was pressed? This has nothing to do with Afrikaners.
It was not a coincidence. The Americans or the Trump administration and Netanyahu, they needed to defocus whatever he's doing in the USA to focus somewhere else in the world and to defocus the world from the ICC, the fact that Netanyahu is a wanted, you know, criminal and genocide and mass murderer. They wanted to divert attention from that to something else. Mm. And it cannot be Ukraine because he's also cut funding, you know, Zelensky in Ukraine. So they had to, and South Africa had to be the target. The target, why? Because of the ICC case. Mm. The target, why? Because Elon Musk, who is having, you know, he's tracing his roots in South Africa. And actually, I went to find out that he's actually tracing his roots in Canada. Mm. His grandfather was a racist right winger from Canada who came to settle down in South Africa. Mm. And also there is this PayPal gang of Elon Musk. And, you know, Peg Rudolf Botha, my former minister, the son is one of the four people. And another guy that came from the neo-Nazi in Namibia, the former Southwest Africa. They are this racist four guys who come from Germany, Namibia, South Africa, and Canada, and are rallying behind Donald Trump. And why? It is for business opportunities in that country. Understand? Secondly, it's for trying to influence politics in South Africa where they will benefit financially as well as their businesses. But it's not a coincidence, Tato. It is just that AfriForum and Solidaritet being led by racist and dumb people, because they are not clever. You cannot be said to be smart and clever if you are in AfriForum like Kali, the CEO of AfriForum. When you go and you want to influence the USA that it must punish the people that you claim to be representing, that's the stupidity of a high note that the AfriForum has done. Now this thing has backfired. I want Donald Trump to actually cancel this AGOA thing. You know, Tato, if we don't suffer, we'll not be able to be self-reliant and self-sufficient. We have to suffer. I know people are going to lose jobs, or people have already lost jobs with the PEPFAR thing for the
PEPFAR.
You understand?
In fact, the U.S. aid, the freezing of U.S. aid meant that a lot of nations that genuinely needed the aid, all of a sudden clinics are closed.
Clinics are closed.
All of a sudden, you can't pay your people. You can't get meds.
One of the countries that suffered the most is Uganda.
Sure.
You understand? In this whole thing, South Africa, look, it's 17% of HIV, and it's only on the HIV and AIDS program. Mm. But let our governments rise and stand up and use our mineral resources in order to counter for that. Let us be, I mean, let's put them Ramaphosa in the cabinet. We've got crisis now. Yeah. We've got thousands of people who are in these NGOs who are going to lose jobs. And government has been talking about job creations. Now, boom, all of a sudden, let the government go and raise and find money the way they did during the COVID-19 lockdown to can save those jobs and save those lives.
You know, I've always preached that only a fool would waste a crisis.
Yeah.
If there's a crisis looming, there's an opportunity for the true leaders in this continent, on this continent,
to rise,
to actually rise to this occasion, to this opportunity, to eventually say, actually, we don't need aid.
Yes.
We've got the resources. Mm-hmm. And if we managed our money and our resources and our minerals properly, we should be giving them aid.
Aid, yes.
Not because the other way around.
This aid, it's born from the resources that the former colonizers, the imperialists and the West, and everybody else, including the East, are mining from our land. It's the theft, whether they are doing it legally or illegally, but it's from our resources. You know, when I was just thinking, when Trump and AfriForum and Solidarity and the DA were crying about the expropriation bill, I was thinking, why don't we start by expropriating the mines that are being owned by foreign companies? Mm. Not the Boers, not South Africans, because Boers don't own any mines anyway. Mm. You understand? Mm. And people are worried about the agricultural land. And I've said many times on this platform, agriculture contributes only 6% of our GDP. Tourism land is contributing over 21% of the GDP. Mm. Why should we be worried about 6% when we are not worried about mining sector that is contributing over 36% of our GDP? Mm. And so why are we not expropriating the mines? They are not owned by individuals. Sure. They are owned by international conglomerates. Then we would have rattled the Americans. When President Ramaphosa sits and say, Trump, is sloganeering, Trump must keep his America, and I'll keep my South Africa. That was not recent, an old speech.
I think 2018.
Yes. Yeah. And let him live to that. Another disturbing factor that I've noticed, I was listening to an interview with the spokesperson of Delco, Mr. Pierre, very young, eloquent spokesperson, very well-informed guy. And that Delco is going to send, or not Delco, the government of the Republic of South Africa, the presidency, is sending people or delegates all over the world to can go and explain our position. And I was sitting there, and asking myself, why should we do that? Mm. Why should we? Yes, we have to communicate our national position to our friends and people who are hosting us. But why do we have special delegation that is going to go and fly around the world to go and tell different countries what is our position regarding expropriation bill, when we've got diplomatic missions that are supposed, that's the purpose of a diplomatic mission.
Let them issue communiques.
Yes.
If that's what they need to do.
Yes.
We don't need a whole roadshow.
And if you are hosted in a country as a diplomat and your host do not understand your position, it does happen that the hosting country, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Secretary of State in the U.S. in this instance, will call the South African ambassador or representative to say, we are reading this thing, we have received a communique, can you please come and clarify it? Why should we have a special delegation? Are we being micromanaged as a country that we have to explain us? I mean, for example, I listened to Macron. I listened to the interview where they were after Trump spoke and they interviewed President Ramaphosa and they interviewed Macron regarding the expropriation of Gaza. We were neutral. Again, we were like, no, it's a sovereign state. Macron was very clear to say that will be wrong to do, that is disrespecting, the lives of other people and so forth. And we are not taking that stand. And we are not, that's why Julius Malema was saying President Ramaphosa is being walloped and is, like he's Trump is treating him like a baby. And people are saying, no, we are not a fighting nation. We are diplomatic. We want to handle things differently. Until when and to what extent?
And yes, you can apply all the diplomacy in the world, but at some stage you need to actually always remind people that we're a sovereign state.
Exactly.
And you will respect us.
Exactly.
You will respect us. We respect you and the bad decisions you're making, but your people voted for you.
Yes.
So carry on. There's a US law that made it illegal for US companies to bribe foreign officials. It's been legislation since 1977.
Okay.
So if Botswana Incorporated from the US is trying to do business in Uganda, before you could bribe the official, let's say in Uganda or in Taiwan. Then they came up with legislation in 1977.
Yes, yes.
That said it is illegal for any American corporation
to
bribe a foreign official in the hope that you're going to get business from them.
Okay.
Trump froze that legislation last week because he says this will mean more business for American companies.
Trump is
like
a businessman.
Like zero shame in his game.
Yeah.
He's like, our company should be able to trade fairly with others. And if others are greasing palms, why can't ours?
Yeah,
but it remains illegal in the US.
He doesn't care. He cares about the US. And I liked him for that. You understand? Yeah. If those ones in Africa or in a shithole or anywhere else in the world are prepared to be given cold drink and be bribed, bribe them and let us do business. We are in the business of making business, of making money. Bribe them. But also, in one of the legislation, this one is a complex one.
Yeah.
You know, the LGBTIs thing? They have to stop. Now
or the Alphabet Gang.
Yes. Now he signed, during the course of this week, a directive that the DOD, Department of Defense, in the U.S. Must stop a budget of an average of $8,000. These are actual figures, which is an average per person per month of about 1,900 soldiers who are, what do they call it?
Are they transitioning?
Yes, who are transitioning. Because apparently when you go after this sexual change thing, there is some form of medication you have to be on.
Yeah, there's a whole regime you have to follow.
You have to follow,
so you have to stop it immediately.
Yeah, they've stopped it. He has given an order.
Mid-treatment.
Immediate.
There must be dire consequences to stopping a process like that mid-process.
He is saying they must fund it from their pockets. Is it being funded with the state money? But also, if you want to see how sick Americans are, how did they end up dead being the if you decide for a sex change, that it became the responsibility of the state.
Absolutely.
How did they arrive there? Because it's your choice. If I decide to go and bleach my skin, why should the state, being my employer, be responsible for that?
I agree with you in that regard, né? But where people have started and the state was funding it, I think you have a responsibility to see to finish.
But
there'll be no new funding for said process from this day. But you can't, in the middle of a transition, say to Botsang, you must now fund it yourself. I think that's inhumane.
Trump.
Let me tell you where I agree with Trump. Because they've also reversed the decision that allowed for trans women to compete in women's sport.
Sport, yes.
And let me tell you why I disagree with trans women competing in women's sport. So as much as you might transition and lower whatever testosterone you had as a man, puberty gives you other gifts that never go away. Your muscle density, the muscle density you get stays with you for the rest of your life.
Yes.
Your muscle mass, your bone density, you can't dilute your bone density.
Exactly.
So you will still have the structure of a man, but competing with other women. There is no way that is fair.
Have a comparative advantage.
And I'll tell you right now, if the entire world bumped its head and decided that, okay, we all agree, trans women should compete with women, I can guarantee you within two Olympics, every podium finish will be a trans woman.
Will be a trans person.
Because women, natural, what are they called? Cis women. That cis women would not be able to compete.
Yes.
So I agree with that one. But to victimize people the way he's carried on, for me, it's a problem.
The Americans deserve Donald Trump. They voted him into power. They believed in his policies. He never minced his words. And he is doing exactly what he promised to do when he gets into office. Like I said before, let them scream, tumble, go up and down. They deserve the same way as we as South Africans, we deserve President Ramaphosa. We deserve the ANC, DA, GNU, because that's how we voted. And certainly that's how democracy works. And the world is waking up, Tato. Yeah. The world is waking up to say this democracy that we were taught at school, that we were told that it is the best thing on earth. Countries must be democratic. If you look at all the messed up countries of the world, mostly are the so-called democracies.
I think we need to shut this down. But the long and the short of it is there's a new imperialism on the horizon.
Yeah.
And the last month and a half is nothing. We've seen nothing yet. And I'm hoping at some stage NATO will jointly say enough is enough. Because at some stage there has to be a unified voice that says enough is enough.
Let us
not see. On our watch.
Let us see if it will happen. Let us see. I doubt
because if America eventually wants to go it alone, then we should be willing, all of us, to say, then go it alone.
Let America go alone.
Go it alone if that's what you want to do. We've been a global village, coexisting, co-depending on one another. All of a sudden, you want to come and bully everyone.
Well,
be an imperialist in 2025.
That's
and blatantly so. Blatantly imperialistic behavior.
Anyway,
we'll
see, bro. But I doubt if NATO will rise against the US. NATO without the US is nothing.
Yeah. There's a saying, F around, find out.
That's it.
The F around, the F around, now we're all going to find out. Yeah,
we're finding out.
Let's go to the so now. State of the Nation address. You made predictions last week about what the so now would be, and the debate has been this week.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Look, like I said, Fresh, there was nothing, again, there's nothing that came out of that. You, even the ministers from other DA and other departments, and I was listening to the PAC leader, they are talking about administrative achievements.
Mm.
They are talking about day-to-day working of the departments. The State of the Nation is supposed to address the major challenges of the country.
Mm.
Don't say we had 300 weeks or what days without load shedding. When there are major things in the country like water shortages in Joburg, when there's still a political discourse regarding the bills that are being passed in parliament, you understand? Again, we saw a drama of political parties, even those in the GNU, talking as if they are not in government, talking as if they are not the government, because they are the government.
Mm.
You know, with the exception of the EFF and Mkhonto-Mizo, in the response or the questions to the president, I must say, in everybody, and I was actually idling, so I watched the entire program. In everybody, you know who impressed me?
Yes.
The economic freedom fighters, young lady, Naledi.
Mm.
In everybody who spoke there.
Human Chirwa.
It's Chirwa. Yes. Is her name Naledi? Chirwa, yes.
Mm.
Chirwa. That's the only person who impressed and articulated what needs to be the State of the Nation address.
Mm.
He questioned President Ramaphosa. Remember last week when I predicted, I mentioned where is the girl with the light of last year? What is the girl that President Ramaphosa, the metaphor?
Tintswalo.
Tintswalo.
Yes.
I mentioned Tintswalo. You understand? And Naledi went into that. You know, I could see, actually, I could hear in Naledi's speech and questions and comments that it was actually Julius Malema's speech. If one pays attention, you know Julius. So I think they prepared it very well and they gave it to her.
Mm.
I think the economic freedom fighters, for me, are the ones who came out very clear, very God-blessing, and actually exposed the weakness of the GNU and President Ramaphosa regarding the State of the Nation address. This whole thing is a waste of time and money, Fresh. I still do not know why in this damn age do we have to wait for the president and all these people in glitter and glamour to go to Cape Town, and the president speaks for 1.5 hour. Then they come 2-3 days after to can ask president question, and he comes back and he's responding to nothing, like puffing air and making noise. And then there was also that, you know, the usual one of pointing fingers at each other and so forth. So this State of the Nation address, yes, they said this year was the lowest in spending because there were no after parties and all those things. 6 million, it was the lowest they've spent. But I'm saying, can they allow President Ramaphosa to do this speech electronically? We listen, we go on social media channels like
YouTube. Just have a family meeting.
Like normally family meetings.
Like during COVID.
Why should we spend 6 million? Look, in government, 6 million, it's nothing. But for a government that does not have 6 million to can fund for ARVs, let them stop this State of the Nation address thing and do it electronically. The president must go live on a certain day and address the nation.
Mm.
And they must go and respond or debate it in parliament. Normal, you know, a sitting of the full House of Parliament, because the NCOP is there as well. But again, it's a wasted opportunity for the GNU to have set the tone. This was the first State of the Nation address of the GNU. So they wasted that opportunity. I didn't get anything out of it.
What are your thoughts on the official opposition MK and whether or not they rose to the occasion?
Look,
as opposition.
Yeah, look, I do not think they raised important issues. They blasted this expropriation bill. They, you know, mentioned quite a number of things. But again, the statement, the official statement of the MK party from Dr. Hlophe, the deputy leader of MK party, it was lukewarm to me. I would have expected more. Look, I'm sitting here and I'm saying I'm impressed by the EFF more than the MKP, while the MKP is the official opposition. You know what I'm saying? The DA were very clear in their position, but doing what they normally do. You know, how their ministers are doing very well, how they are there, you can come and watch the former attacks of the ANC and blame me. Can you believe that people at the sauna, they were still talking about the 9 wasted years of Jacob Zuma. Now, Dr. Hlophe of the MKP had to come and defend that to say he doesn't understand why people still refer to the 9 years of President Jacob Zuma as wasted years, when there's been infrastructure development, outroll of HIV, number of kids, HIV, what do you call it, outrolling of HIV drugs, number of kids who went to school, quite a number of tangible things that had happened during that year. The sad part about that is this story of 9 wasted years that the DA is running with, it came from the ANC president Ramaphosa when he took, you know, over office, as if he didn't deputize Jacob Zuma. Again, politics of cult and glorifying individuals. When it's wasted years, it's Zuma wasted years. He was the deputy. Ntata Ramaphosa was the deputy. He was forever in the NEC of the ANC. And the African National Congress has always sang a song that they are a broad church that works in staff collectively.
So are you saying that if we agree that there were 9 wasted years, then President Ramaphosa needs to own them too?
Yes.
Because he was a part of them.
He was part. He was the second in charge. He was the second in command for the 5 of the 9 wasted years. He was the second in command. You understand? So this whole thing of them saying it wasted, let them say the government wasted years. Which government? The ANC-led government that time. Because it was ANC-led government. You understand? And if it was wasted, they all wasted it. Collectively, if there were thugs, if there was looting, and people still, again, we are in 2025. People talk about how an Indian family of the Guptas came and stole money in this country. And nobody is talking about the trillions of rents that we lost through what you call the state pension fund institution, the Steyn Millers, and all other companies.
For instance, Steinhoff is never treated with the same gloves that state capture is.
Yes. But, and Steinhoff is the biggest in the history of the Republic of South Africa. The Steinhoff matter.
The heist.
The heist is the biggest heist this country has ever experienced. And we are not talking about it. President Ramaphosa himself, as the head of state, has never uttered a word regarding Steinhoff. Not even once. It's why? Because it's white. It's white people who corrupted the state, who stole from, you know, the state coffers. And it's okay that we can't talk about it when it's lily white crime and corruption. The AfriForum itself, AfriForum is talking about corruption and Outer and the DA, but they never speak about the Steinhoff heist. And that's the country that we are living in, and people want to deny that we are a racially divided country. You know this thing of AfriForum and the sauna, you know what it did to me? Did you see on Twitter? It actually showed the world that this Rainbow Nation is a farce. It's a fake. The way South Africans went on each other's throats.
Yeah.
It clearly showed that there is something that has been put under the carpet and racial violence is simmering in South Africa. You understand? I don't know what will I do where I stay. That's why I'm dressed like this. I think my Africans neighbors will spare me the day this thing erupt. Because we are taking it for granted. And I want to say to our African friends and, you know, fellow country people, I don't know why would they want or be invited to be settlers in the US while they're already settlers in South Africa instead of going back to Holland.
Mm.
And if they do not address this racial issue and start conducting themselves in a humane way, trust me, what happened in Zimbabwe will happen in South Africa. It will happen. They never believed. The racist people, I'm not talking about white people, because there's white people and there's racist white people.
Mm.
You understand? The racist people, I do not understand why do they think they will get away with this racial behavior forever.
Mm.
One day, our children, our grandfathers may have failed. Our fathers may have failed. Me and you, we may have failed to sort this thing out.
Mm.
Our children will not go and talk about Robben Island and exile and political parties. They will rise against their children.
Mm.
So they're not investing wisely by trying to create this racial classicist superior people. They're not, because our children, they're also having their own identity.
Sure.
And they're investing racism in their children. We are investing liberal minds into our kids, and they will rise against their children in future. And the parents will not be there to defend themselves.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to someone with a sober mind taking the trouble to understand that the slogan that often Julius is accused of calling for genocide about,
mm-hmm.
in the bigger scheme of the struggle, in the bigger scheme of the struggle, I think that is, yeah, that's my gate. Sorry, my gate rings here. So yeah. In the bigger scheme of the struggle,
mm-hmm.
Maburu does not refer to farmers.
Yeah.
Maburu refers to the system.
The system, yes.
The repressive racist system.
Yes.
It was never about farmers. But because it suits the narrative of demonizing Juju or anyone else, or whether it's the Peter Mokaba.
Yeah.
Because it suits that narrative, it's easy to jump on the bandwagon, to just take the Boer and think, this guy's saying farmers must be killed.
He must be killed, yeah.
But that's not what Maburu was in the context of the slogan or the song. But it's like no one wants to do the research. No one wants to read what the Human Rights Commission actually
concluded.
What they concluded and ruled on that slogan.
Yes.
Because that slogan is not calling for a genocide.
No.
But no one is willing to read, understand, comprehend. You're so frustrated. What's that?
It's we can talk about this and hammer it into people's heads. But again, it's like I said last week when we spoke about Trump believing the lies of Elon Musk and AfriForum about South Africa.
Yes.
It's not to say people don't want to read or comprehend, because even if you are lazy to read, if you listen to the court ruling, the Human Rights Commission ruling on this matter, you would have understood, because it was explained how did the court arrive at it. And it's years ago, by the way.
Yes.
How did the court arrive at this? That's why the same slogan, the same as the PAC slogan, one settler, one bullet.
Yes.
Some of us who were there, we understood what it meant at the time.
Yes.
I mean, it went to court as well, you know, and the court ruled about that slogan. And but we are dealing with people who do not want to change, to transform, to accept reality.
Mm.
And that is the danger of the society in South Africa. This mixed masala, racial, rainbow, a fake society that we are sitting in. And that is my biggest fear, Fresh, that the hungry people, and I've in the past used the example of after the color line, it will be the wealth. The hungry people of Alexander and Weinberg will jump the highway into Sandton one day. The angry and hungry black people of this country will start looking at white people as the people who have kept them hungry, even if it's the government that has failed them.
Yes.
You know, you remember the part where, how do I put it, where black people actually were against the singing of the Afrikaner song by this Afrikaner musician.
Was it the Della Rey song?
The Della Rey song and so forth. If you go and inform yourself, what does that? They can do it in their rallies and all that, but it's never in the headlines.
And but also, yeah, likewise with the Della Rey song.
Yes.
Yes, there was an uproar about it, But if you read about who General De La Rey is, you'll understand that it had nothing to do with black people.
No, nothing.
There's nothing racist about the De La Rey song.
No,
if anything, it was about don't be afraid to stand up for yourself.
Yes. It's a courageous song. Yes.
If anything, it's about learn from how he stood up.
He stood up
during wartime.
And again, you know, these are some of the histories of this country. If we want to build a so-called multiracial nation or society, those are things that we must teach. You know, we can't just oppose for the sake of opposing things without knowing the background and the history. You must know your history. You must know where we come from and how did we arrive at this stage. Without that kind of information, we'll never progress as a nation. And it's going to be difficult.
And it goes back to why it is important to read, to be curious, to want to learn, to want to understand.
Inform yourself.
A lot of people will read one small thing in a paragraph as a tweet.
Mm.
And that's the sum total of what the opinion is based on.
Exactly.
Versus, let me read further and get a better understanding. Because it's only through reading and understanding someone else's point of view that you might even change your point of view because you bothered to listen.
And you can listen to other people. And I always say, if you do not know, it doesn't harm to ask those who are in the know. Mm. It doesn't harm you.
Yeah. And that is why someone like Mbusane Ndlozi can afford to leave politics if he wants.
Yeah.
Because he's got like a solid education behind him and he will not struggle to find a job as an academic if he needs to. If he needs to go into civil society, he will not struggle there either. Because he bothered to educate himself. In fact, let's go there.
Yes, he finally came and spoke. It started on Monday morning at 6:30, actually. So that was the first happening of politics this week.
Sure.
Surprise in the SABC with Mzwandile Mbetshe. You know, I watched that interview. The guy is very good, eloquent, and he's humble. Like I said last week, Dr. Ndlozi is humble, but he did talk about what transpires openly. Mm. During the course of this week, he was on the Power FM chairman show with
he's been on a whole road show.
He
did the Mac G show podcast 2 days ago also.
Yes. But what I've noticed, his responses are the same. So he's very measured and very well prepared. He still doesn't give an indication of what is the next step. Although he spoke about organizing a civil movement, organization where people are going to come from all political parties. But what came out of Dr. Ndlozi was that, and this is one thing that I picked up politically, that the fallout with, and he kept on saying with the leadership, he didn't want to say with Julius. Mm. You understand? It looks like when there were engagements and negotiations prior elections and after towards, you know, that black unity, the progressive front, he favored engagements with Umkhonto we Sizwe Party and other so-called progressive organizations. And he fell out of when Julius wanted Umkhonto we Sizwe to be swallowed on a well-established EFF because it already had structures. It was already the third biggest party in the country. Ndlozi was one of the people who actually favored to say, instead of going and pulling out and being angry like a little child, let us go with this progress. They would have moved. The unity. So he was talking more about unity of you know, the left parties in the country. He wanted them to come out united, not just to say in parliament we will work together. You see, the guy is very progressive. You know, this thing of we'll vote together in parliament where our policies are the same, it's nothing, because parliament never delivers anything to the people. Mm. They pass acts that pile up dust, but he was simply saying, let us work together in municipalities, in provinces, where if we can take power, we will be able to be progressive as a nation. And fresh, how long have we been talking about there's only one thing that's keeping African people behind? One. And it is not white people.
Mm.
It is division amongst black people. Sometimes the division was sought by the apartheid agent, by the imperialists, and by the racist. But we also amongst ourselves have allowed to be divided over things that has nothing to do with white people.
Mm.
Why is it difficult for black political parties or the so-called former liberation movements that are supposed to represent black interests unite. People are talking in the ANC, for example, they are talking about, no, but we are not a black organization, we are not racist and all that. For me, that's utter nonsense. Mm. For an organization that was formed to liberate black people and return land to black people or African people, to stand up and say, no, but we can't enforce on talk about uniting black people. Why not? Mm. Who will be harmed when African people gang up? Not against anybody. When African people teaming up, who will be harmed? When a family, a bigger African family or relatives, and they decide, we're going to take all our money, we're going to buy a soccer team, we're going to contest on a soccer team that is playing in the PSL, the Professional Soccer League. What's wrong with that family when they do that? You understand? Whom are they harming? People cannot come and say, you are doing crowdfunding when you want to progress as a family. We are African people. Yeah. What's wrong with us uniting and doing things for the best interest of the African people? There's nothing wrong with that.
And I think progressive white folk that understand that Africans uniting is not them uniting against them.
Them, yes.
They will actually possibly buy into that.
Yes.
Saying I am all about black consciousness is not me saying I hate white people.
No.
Or that I'm against white people. Yes. In fact, I'd encourage all of us to have a consciousness about ourselves.
About ourselves.
So that when we meet, we know exactly who we are at a personal level.
That is,
and that we must respect the other side.
Yeah.
It's not to say, because I'm pro-black consciousness, I hate white people or white people must die.
There's nothing to do with them. That is what I've picked up from conversations with Dr. Buseli Ndlozi, that his level of thinking and where he is going, the direction he is going. I mean, look, all political parties are, you know, inviting him, everybody's. But I can already see the picture. You can, look, the SABC is a national radio. Mm. And he has already stated that he's leaving political parties, that he was very clear on. And I think it's a good move for him. Looking at his personality, his character, he does not deserve to be in politics. Politics, it's for pigs and dogs. Understand, those who don't care, those who are not afraid to be play in the dirty mud, understand? So Ndlozi is not that kind of person. To see it as an academic, educated person and you want to reason with people who sometimes throw reasoning outside the window, through the window, it's a very difficult complex to be dealing with politicians. The man must not be lost. I'm glad that he's going into the civil organization or civil movement. And I think where he's going to be used, there's already a call in the country of what do you call this thing that President Begin and others are calling a national dialogue.
The dialogue.
Yeah. You know, Fresh, I'm one of the people who's against the national dialogue.
I think it's a waste of time.
Waste of time.
I think if you still don't know what your people want at this stage, then vele they are right when they say you're not in touch.
Yeah.
And people have been lamenting that you guys are not in touch with what your people want. And in fact, funny, I was listening to the Africa Malani show, Early Breakfast, on Talk Radio 702.
Mm-hmm.
And he spoke about, literally just yesterday morning, and not a single listener agreed that there's a need for a dialogue. In fact, the one said, they know what we need.
Yes.
They have not delivered it.
Yeah.
Another one said, no, there was a dialogue the other day. We voted. That was the dialogue.
That's the dialogue, yes.
And then another one said, the way we voted was the dialogue.
Yeah.
But clearly we were not loud enough.
Enough.
So we need to be louder at the next poll. I laughed so hard.
I agree with those things. But again, my problem with this call for a national dialogue, people like to be in symposiums, air conditioned offices, talk big language and big English, write papers. And the next thing, they're there in suits. When the people out on the street in Texas and what, they don't even understand the nonsense and the gibberish they're talking about. My biggest problem with the call out for the national dialogue is the people who are calling for it. The very same people who were political as well as business leaders in this country are the ones who are calling for a national dialogue. Now, you failed. President Mbeki had 2 terms as the head of the country. And he's got various platforms like the Thabo Mbeki, you know, leadership school at UNISA. He's got the Thabo Mbeki Foundation, like all, everybody has a foundation. And they failed the nation. You know, now we must take the same bunch of academics, retired old people who failed, whether in politics, whether in business, whether in academic, who must take the same people. They must go and sit in a symposium somewhere in Sandton and do a national dialogue and craft a paper that they're going to shove into the ANC and DA leadership, and it will find itself to be policy of government, or it will influence policy of government. I think the people must be, how do I put it? We must rally people to reject that process, because they just want the status quo to remain. Remember, old retired people and rich people, they don't want to be disrupted from their comfort zones. They are very comfortable. They don't have anything to worry about like a 20-year-old youth.
And why is the dialogue, or the need of a dialogue, why does it coincide with you not winning an election?
Exactly.
Outright.
Exactly.
Because had you outright won the election, would you still call for a dialogue?
Will you call for a dialogue? Exactly. You're 100% my brother. President Mbeki came out of retirement with Tokyo Sekgwale, Matthew Posa, and I can't remember who, to campaign for the ANC when Umkhonto we Sizwe was formed. And they campaigned. What did they want? Mm. They still wanted the African National Congress to continue being the leading party with over 50%. So according to them, the ANC has done right and well for this country. Mm. According to them, the people spoke through the ballot box. And now they are realizing, well, our strategy did not work. The ANC lost the power, and there's indications that it may lose further moving forward. Now they want to call for a national dialogue. So they want to keep the country in the same position it has been, where the rich remain rich, white people's privileges are protected by the constitution. Understand? The minority is the minorities, whether it's by race, whether it's by minority, by gender, or what, are highly protected in this country. Mm. And the majority, who happens to be landless African people, are remaining poor. The levels of poverty are increasing. You know, I see people celebrating that the economy grew with 0.8%. And people are celebrating that. Our foreign debt is forever increasing. What is there to be celebrated? What is there when everything that's bad is going up in South Africa? Everything, the crime, you know, it's the everything that is bad is going up, and we sit here and we think we've got a progressive state. We don't. Mm. We've got a regressive state. Mm. We are moving forward. We talk nice. We talk a lot, and we produce a lot of good papers and all that. And what happens after? We don't see the results. Mm. You can have good policies. You must be able to measure your progress with the results.
You know, that's why, especially looking at this back and forth about a white genocide, a part of me wishes we could find a voice that both sides actually listen to.
When
and that can actually have everyone understand that we are all on the same boat here. And in this boat that we're all in, that could sink any time, depending on what happens.
Exactly.
We have people who are violent. And we are all at the mercy of those violent people. Not white people at the mercy of them, not just women and children. In fact, if you look at the statistics, men are probably the biggest bunch or the biggest cohort of victims of this
of violence.
Of this violent bunch.
Yes.
We are all in this boat, and we are, I'm sorry to use this word, we are all effed. Mm-hmm. If we don't deal with the violence. And this violence, unfortunately, will always be visited upon the soft targets.
Yes.
If you live in an isolated area, as a farmer, as a farm worker, you are a soft
target. You are a soft target.
If you're walking down the street, even as a man, you're a soft target. If you're a woman walking down the street, you're an even softer target. So soft targets are at the mercy of this bunch of violent people. That is our enemy. And if the sooner we wake up to that and deal with this bunch of people who think it's okay to be violent, to kill, to rape, to maim,
exactly,
then maybe we will start going somewhere. But if one group feels like they're a victim, another group feel like they're a victim, but we're not saying, guys, we're all fucked here. I apologize for using that word. All of us.
Yeah. But that's exactly the problem. If you look at the police reports and the stats, man, 18 black men, and they're specific because when they do statistics, they classify them according to raise. 18 black men, men are killed in South Africa every day. 18 per day.
Yeah.
And they're killed by who? By other men or by other women or by animals, by accident.
But mainly by other men.
Mainly by other men.
Yes.
And if we don't deal with the problems in that manner,
we have a violence problem.
We are a very violent society. And we don't want to be dealing with that. You know, I come from old school. I said, let us put, if it goes to a push that when I wake up every day, there's a soldier on my street with an R5 rifle for peace and security, I would rather have that.
Yeah, but you know what they're going to say? Be careful what you ask for. Do we want a militarized state? You know what? At some stage, we need to actually say, maybe we need a bit of militarization.
Not even maybe. I think we
need that's what we need to do, that's what we need to do. I'll give you an example. There were a few cash and transit heists in Botswana.
Okay.
And government decided, oh, okay, we'll actually then send the army to be part of the escort of these vans.
Yes.
What happened?
Stopped.
The heist stopped.
Yes. Because you are matching these people, the police themselves have said, guys with heists are well-trained people. You know, the way they execute this. So they are what? They are military people. Let us send the army to be dealing with them. Let me be the same force, the same power. You want to go and send a normal security guard who is not trained militarily, who has been trained regimentally, to go and deal with a heartless criminal. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And as a nation, we have to start coming out of that. This thing of talking and writing beautiful books and what. You know, somebody was saying to me, Botsang, why don't you write your thesis and get your master's? I said, what change will it bring? What difference will it bring?
And I'm certain if, since we need a dialogue, can we start maybe with a referendum?
Mm-hmm.
Asking everyone of voting age, please give us permission to bring the military where we might need the might.
Yeah.
To see what people say.
To see what the people are saying.
Because people are tired.
Yes.
People are tired. So instead of the clevers, I'm not going to say the clever blacks, because the clever blacks and clever whites.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the clever say, be careful what you ask for, we are from a militarized state before 1994. At some stage, something has got to give. Because nothing changes if nothing changes.
Exactly.
Yo, guys. Guys. So let's have a referendum again.
Would you be fine
if there was a police, I mean, an army van on the street corner?
Yes.
I will cook dinner for them every night.
Yeah.
Personally. So you don't have to take it out of your own budget.
Exactly. 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 The people will feed them. The people will take care of them. Look at the security companies that are all over our communities.
Yeah.
How we respect and we take care of them. Because I feel safe that I'm sitting in the studio and there is a security patrol. Even if I don't pay for that, my neighbor is paying for it.
Mm.
But the fact that there's visibility of security.
I can tell you right now, my neighborhood watch, we have a WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
We will gladly adopt a whole platoon if that's what we need to do
SADF.
To come and patrol our area.
Yeah.
And because we live on plots,
you are soft targets.
Very soft targets.
You are isolated from normal movements.
My man, you have no idea. Like, you have no idea how isolated we are. It's actually crazy. That's why I'm saying that me, I will personally adopt 5 guys from the army to come and patrol in my area.
Anyway, brother man.
Let's move quickly. Speaking of camouflage and the army, the MK.
Yes.
Are in the news this week.
Yeah.
Duduzile. Mwana wa Baba.
Yeah.
Twin Sierra Baba was in the news.
Oh, she's a twin, yes.
Yeah, yes. She's in the news for yelling at Floyd Shivambu on social media.
Hey, you even call it yelling it.
Swearing at and yelling at.
Yeah. You know, first, on a serious note and politically, I don't think it is just to do Zile yelling and swearing at Floyd Shivambu, the Secretary General.
Mm.
It is actually a very sad state of affairs from controversy. And let them be warned. People will start saying it's infiltration of the enemy agent and all those things. Mm. Ill discipline. It destroys organization, not only political organization. Even in a work environment, once there's an element of mistrust and ill discipline and disrespect. If you don't respect each other, it destroys organization. Duduzile Zuma is one a senior member of Umkhonto weSizwe, despite the age, senior member. And one of the founders and a daughter of the founding father of Umkhonto weSizwe, which makes it difficult.
I laughed. There was a tweet saying, do you think she's behaving like this because Kingwana wa Koshopong?
You remember the old... Yeah. Now, I think there's underlying factors.
Yeah.
I'm very close with quite a number of people in Umkhonto weSizwe, like Andile and even Hlamulo himself. But I can tell you there's underlying factors and they are not being nipped. I think...
How would you advise the MK party to proceed from this day going forward?
Look, let me first tell you what MK survived and it put them in a better position. When Umkhonto weSizwe was founded, first it was being described as a Jacob Zuma clan, what family business, what. It grew... over that. Then it moved to a point where it was regionalized. You said it's a Zulu party from KZN. It went up to demonstrate that it's actually not just a mere Zulu party from KZN. Another challenge they faced is it was the disgruntled people from the ANCL, but it has now quite a number of people who are not disgruntled from the ANC. And you look at the voters, most of the people, I mean, to secure almost what, 3 million votes, 3.2 million votes. You can't tell me that it is currently members of the ANC. So they've handled that part properly at the beginning. They've survived the worst part. You know, a political party first year of existence is a very difficult part, especially when it has elements of people who are being painted dark by the media and is seen with as dark people. Now, they should use the same way of doing things. How did MK survive this? It survived because they managed to contain and handle things in a disciplined manner. You know, there was command and control. Yes, they may be wearing camouflage and all that and look militarily as Umkhonto weSizwe, the military wing of the former ANC Liberation Movement. But they managed to say there's command and control. And if there's command and control, members of Umkhonto weSizwe, like Duduzile Zuma, as a member, forget the surname Zuma, as a member of Umkhonto weSizwe, like all others, they will have to listen to the command. Unfortunately, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Understand? There's a central command team that is commanding the organization, but personally, ill discipline of individuals within the organization. I mean, that's not all that happened with Duduzile. She was asked to apologize, and the directive from her father, who is the president of MK, was very clear. Apologize to the SG, Florence Ivambo, and stop this thing of...
Which, initially she didn't, though.
She didn't.
Initially she apologized to the party.
Yes.
And for her behavior.
And for her behavior.
But there was zero mention of the SG.
Yes.
But she's back again with another apology.
Yes, she now issued an apology. That one was rejected by the party. The first apology. Now she has issued another one. And you know what I said too? When things like this happen, I always say, if it doesn't harm you, if it doesn't take anything away from you, it is easy to apologize genuinely and let this thing sail and focus on building the organization. You understand? But there's other things that happened. There are media reports, and for me, they are unconfirmed because I haven't heard Umkhonto weSizwe issuing an official statement. You remember earlier on you asked me about how did, in my view, MK fare in the sauna response?
Ah, yes.
And I said it was lukewarm. That's not what I expected. There's media reports that Dr. John Hlophe, the statement at some, because when he was reading, I like the guy, and the guy is a former judge for you know, God's sake. He's very eloquent, he speaks well, he knows and he understands politics. He may not be a politician, he's not a political material. But when I was sitting there listening and looking even at the body language of Dr. John Hlophe, I realized something, it's not right. I was not happy about this. I expected more.
And like you're saying, given his weight.
Yes.
Gee.
He's impeached
or not.
Yes.
Given the bright mind he is.
Exactly.
Just his... Unalisiriti, man.
Yes.
I expected so much more.
Yeah, but now the story is, And this is why I'm saying there are deeper underlying factors inside the controversies. The story in the media, and that was reported by this guy who calls himself the Lord of the Media, the famous journalist. Okay. His tweet handle is Lord of the Media. His tweet was saying, there are talks that the speech that Dr. Kloppe was reading at the sauna, it was given to him in the last minute by Mzwanele Manyi. And then Mzwanele Manyi being questioned, he said he got that from the Secretary General Floyd Shivambu. And then the story was, when they gave it to Dr. Kloppe, they said he must change his well-prepared speech. Look, the guy is a judge. You understand? Do you know they prepare in advance? He had prepared a speech for days. But they gave him that speech in the last minute. And now, when they gave it to him, he was told that it's from President Zuma, said that's the speech.
So that's our official position now.
Yes, that is. You understand? And he went on with it. Bruh, let me tell you, that was actually the worst response to the sauna debate in all political parties. That and look how it made them look clumsy. They are the official opposition. They are the ones who were supposed to set the tone, and they failed. Now, when you have speeches like that being sneaked in, people's names being used, it tells you there's a problem. It tells you there's an underlying problem in the organization. And those are some of the things that Mkhonto is supposed to be handling at the moment.
The rumors that things almost came to getting physical between Zwanele and Dr.
Yes. Look, it's rumors. Like I said, I also think Nhlamulo, the spokesperson or whatever, the organization should have issued an official statement and clarify this thing quick, because you can't have two senior people. They are not only senior, they are also seasoned people.
Sure.
Having such skirmishes in an organization, what does it say to the followers on the ground? That's why you will find people who are not really politicians, like Dudu Zile Zuma, falling into the cracks.
Can I approach this like my uncle used to approach it?
Yeah.
Sometimes you must just let boys go outside and deal with it. Then they must come back in and agree it was settled. Who do you think would have won?
Tato, you are mischievous. Do you know the township is there? I don't know. He says your
no, uncle. My uncle used to always say,
yeah,
if Limaji Tanji,
yeah, go out.
Don't stop them.
Yeah.
Let them get it out of their systems. And then as long as we all agree that the outcome was determined. Was determined.
By them.
And then it's closed.
You know, there's an old saying, there's an old Zulu saying that was used. Kokasi in the township, Pumas Betan.
Exactly.
Yeah, we are sitting here in the
Pumas Seilwe.
Let's go out and beat each other up and come back inside. But and then when they come, they've sorted that whole thing out. So now I think they must be adults. The organization is faced with much bigger problems. They want to grow the organization, and they're matured people. I mean, I've worked and I know Mzwanele Manyi. He's one of the most matured people I've ever come across. And like, what is this thing of wanting to use another one's speech? And you see what it does. Let me tell you what it does. It actually fuels the rift between Dudu Zile and Floyd Shivambu. Because remember what Mzwanele Manyi's response is. No, I was given that thing by the SG. I was acting on instruction from the SG. Now, what it has done is saying to controversies with people, why would Floyd mislead Dr. Kloppe, the deputy president, using President Zuma's thing? And Dudu Zile since then said, but that's my father. Before he's even your president, he's my father first. But I think President Zuma handled this very well, to say to the daughter, you are going to do what I told you to
do. No favoritism.
You are going to behave as an ordinary member of Mkhonto we Sizwe. You are going to apologize. I will deal with the rest of the things after. Because Mkhonto we Sizwe owes their members, their followers, an explanation of what actually transpired there.
And unfortunately for her sins, because she is Ngwana wa Koshopong, she's going to be held to a higher standard when dealing with certain things.
Yes.
It must never seem like you are acting out because of Ubaba.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
It's a difficult one.
So I don't envy her position.
Yes.
Because she's also a very passionate, fiery woman.
Yes.
But she also needs to understand that fire needs to be tamed more than anyone else's fire in the party, because he's your father.
Yeah. And that's the difficult part of it. I feel sorry for her, actually, because anything that she's going to say, even if it's right,
yes,
that people who don't agree with her,
yes,
it will be looked as if she's saying it because she is the president's daughter, who is very close to the daughter. I actually saw the twin, Duduzani, tweeted as well. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
That I stand by my sister.
Mm.
Now, he's not in politics. Can Duduzani please stay with his nice haircuts and shiny suits and leave politics? He's a businessman. He must go and deal with Johan Rupert and Patrice Motsepe. That's where he must be contesting.
Yeah, but he must also take a position.
No, but Fresh, you...
You know what you sound like? You sound like people who would say to someone with a political opinion, yeah, when he must just stick to DJing. Yeah, when he must just stick to being a model.
No.
We are all political animals, all of us.
But in this instance, yeah, he's not talking politics.
Mm.
He's talking the bloodline. That's my sister. I stand by you, right or wrong. We don't need that. Now we are in politics. He didn't comment or tweet on saying something political. He's standing by my sister.
But you know that family relations, by their very nature, are political themselves.
Yeah.
So politics is everywhere.
it's politics of the family. But yeah, I think controversies must rise and handle this better. We need a very solid, strong opposition in South Africa.
We need to wrap it up because we are out of time and we've already passed an hour. The hour is that side.
Hey.
The handling of the repatriation of the mortal remains of the fallen soldiers in the DRC. They're finally home.
Yes.
After a wall of noise and not giving information to family.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on how everything was handled?
Look, you know, the other day I was listening to a retired general, I think it's Mutau, he's the former chief of the South African National Defense Force. Fresh, if you listen to experts, medical experts, it is so sad. Do you know that those bodies were already in the decomposing state? Because one, there were no fridges, there were no allocation of fridging at the South African base in Goma.
And then you're near the equator.
And
you're in a tropical region.
I have lived there.
Everything is against anybody that is not being refrigerated.
Exactly. That's the first thing. I've listened to, what do you call them, pathologists or whatever. They were saying actually, while they were awaiting these bodies in Kampala, in Uganda, they were already they were saying 5 days was enough for the body to start decomposing. Now, you know what's the sad part is that what did the families receive? Were they recognizable after? Did they manage to say, we will never know that situation or the end results because it was handled in absolute secrecy?
Yes.
Look, the South African government could not do anything because the M23 rebels in Goma, they had captured the airport as well. So those people could not be airlifted, or those mortal remains could not be airlifted from Goma. The closest, and this is where politics failed us, the closest airport from Goma, after the Goma airport that's kept, it was the Kigali airport from Rwanda.
Yes.
But because of the fight and the undiplomatic, you know, skirmishes and squabbles between President Ramaphosa and all that, they couldn't do that. I mean, the Rwanda Defense Force could have actually even airlifted those people out of Goma into Rwanda and into South Africa. They could have done that.
And some saying, maybe I watch too much TV, I watch too many movies, but it can't have been impossible to even find a South African with a private helicopter.
Not even a helicopter.
Just a private helicopter could have... If it means we beg for a ceasefire so we can repatriate them, we do that.
But they had already given a ceasefire, the M23 reverse to can remove the mortal remains. The other question that I'm sitting with is, in that instance, because it's an emergency instance, there's temporary ceasefire for one day. Why didn't we use our military jet? Why didn't we lose our big jet that could have carried, one jet could have carried all those bodies into South Africa?
That is why I'm so confused.
Especially when in a sense, so I think in this instance, look, we are not military experts, me and you, but I'm simply saying there's a war, you've got fallen soldiers, and the rebels, the people who kill them are saying, for one day will ceasefire come and take the bodies. Mm. Why didn't we put a jet there? Why didn't we say a military big bomber jet to go and pick them up and bring them home? Then they were on the road. From Goma, on the road.
A bad road.
horrible road. I've driven that road. I know it's horrible. Not even to Rwanda, to Uganda. And they only could fly from Entebbe Airport in South Africa. Fortunately, on Thursday night, the families were finally given the mortal remains of their loved ones. You understand? And I honestly think if we were in a normal country, in a normal state, the head of the Minister of Defense and her generals must roll in this instance. There's no excuse why. It shows that they were not ready that this thing could happen. You can't be a military and you are not ready for such circumstances. I mean, you have a whole base with how many are there? Hundreds of soldiers, and you don't have a refrigerator in case one of them falls. How did we arrive at that point? It's not the first time we've got a peacekeeping mission. We have had soldiers in Burundi before. You understand? Why didn't we have a refrigerator? By the way, when it's because of a refrigerator, we probably want more refrigerator in case people die.
Yeah, but there isn't even any food to put in the refrigerator.
No. Well, so, you don't put food in that one. It's a refrigerator in case you even keep medicines and things like that.
You know, I almost have tears in my eyes because of your optimism in thinking that all of a sudden a culture of heads rolling will grow out of nowhere.
There's
zero culture of heads rolling.
No, I'm very surprised that the public service still have people who mess up and mess up and mess up, and they are redeployed, moved somewhere. And it's okay, people get away with this thing. I mean, the DA will sit in parliament, heads must roll. What happens? The president is not taking decisions that incompetent people must move. And not only move people out, sometimes charge them. You understand? Sometimes charge these people. If, and I'm saying if carefully, if there's a finding after this talk in parliament and the committee that there was wrong decision making by the generals or the leadership of South African National Defense Force, they must be charged. The Defense Force has courts, has military courts. They must arrest those generals and charge them. If they are found guilty, they must be jailed. That's how it should be done. When people steal money, whether they are mayors or councillors or ministers, and they are found with corruption and fraud, they must be charged. They must not just be removed and fired. Charge them and jail them. And we don't have that culture in South Africa. And that's why we have the public service that it has become normal that people are corrupt. Corruption has been normalized. To steal, you know, nothing will happen. To overspend, you know, overspending is stealing. If you look at governance, if you are overspending the money or spending it on wrong things,
or just fruitless expenditure,
actually stealing from the public purse. Why are these people not being charged and prosecuted criminally for their criminal conduct and behavior?
Hence, I almost had tears in my eyes.
You're
very optimistic. Your optimism just reduces me to tears.
Don't cry in the studio.
There's zero culture of heads rolling. There's zero culture of consequence management. And it's not about to start now.
We must just
go back to the status quo. You're on your own. And may the good Lord be with you.
You know, Fresh, having have said that, that's one of the things I'm going to work on and instill in the public service. I've decided, I've told you before, I want to stay in the public service.
Yes.
Actually, next week, while we'll be sitting here, I'll be done. My court case, my labor matter is sitting, God willing, next week, nothing will happen, nothing will disturb me. Once that is done and I get back into the public service, one of the things that I'm going to push for, I know a lot of people will hate me more. It's okay not to like Botan, but it's to instill the culture that people's heads must roll and people be charged when they are found to have squandered public monies. I'm sitting here fresh. My employer or the state has spent over 3 million in trying to get rid of me. 3 million rands. I'm not talking about what they owe me. I'm talking about what they have spent on legal matters. 3 million rands. And it's okay. Everybody's going on as if things are normal.
It's not our money, so why should they care?
That's the culture we should start fighting. We should expose such. We should talk about such. I should be able to stand up and go to the police station and lay a charge. And let's see how that goes. Because should it happen once or twice, things will start changing. One thing that I've realized the courts are doing, they are starting to make over and over that those in the public service who were responsible for squandering and wasting state money, they must pay from their pockets. If we can get more of such cases, that sets precedents And I think it will start shaking people up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're out of time.
Thank you, my brother. I'm also tired. Yeah, I was going to check my farm.
No, I was going to say, my man, Ghana, you are up at 4 a.m. to make sure that the cattle have been fed, they've been watered, the irrigation system works. You know, farming is such brutal work.
It's to find
people who are so passionate about it. Not for me. I believe it takes a special kind of person to want to do it at the level that some of the farmers in this country farm at.
I'm a dog farmer, I know.
Yeah. You know, your guy is the breeder. You breed marriages, children, and dogs.
Thank you, John.
Boor Butsang, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brother Fresh.
And we shall see you next week. Where do we find you online?
Butsangm@gmail.com and on WhatsApp 082-485-9100. And on social media handles, it's @ButsangM.
Thank you very much for hanging out with us, as always, on Wow What A Week, #Politrix. With Fars and Boor Butsang, we do this again next week, same time, same place. Coming to you live from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg, we are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and the team at Pezulu Works for the cinematography, and also to artist The Flow Fraser for all of the imaging. Our executive producer is on maternity leave. Shout out to Kelezo and baby Marang. Marang, good luck. Naram Tsaba. So good luck, Marang. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.